The Monologue.
33-year-old man in Seattle was arrested after a crime spree right off of Lake Washington, where he's accused of assaulting a toddler. A toddler. But also two women that he pushed into the lake. And a little bit more. Started yesterday morning. Woman called police. The woman and two friends were taking photos at a lookout, according to Como News, when the suspect tried to grab one of their phones from her hand. She struggled with him a little bit, and then he pushed her into the lake and ran off. A few minutes later, another 911 call came in. Again, a woman saying a man pushed her off the trail, but this time he decided to attack her 18-month-old daughter. The victim said he came up from behind them, grabbed the toddler by the hood, lifted her, and threw her to the side of the trail. The mother tried to go after the daughter, but the man then grabbed the mother and pushed her into the lake. So we're talking about a menace. Someone who most likely has some sort of mental health illness, but the truth of the matter is, I don't care anymore. Not really. I wish he would get help. But I'm to the point where I now care more about the victims and not the criminal. And something tells me that when you look into his background, he'll have a criminal history. Oh, what's that? He does? He's been prosecuted before. He's done time before. But has never gotten the help, either forcefully or otherwise, that he desperately needs? Okay. Unless you're going to change the laws in Olympia, Democrats, to allow for it to be easier to commit people who might need it. Unless you're going to enforce the law and actually care. Yeah, I no longer care about some of these criminals. Some I do, the ones who are desperate need of help but aren't getting it at all. This is someone who I guarantee you was offered something. If, in fact, he's dealing with any sort of mental illness. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's just a bad guy. Whatever the reason is behind what he did, the victims didn't ask for it. The victims didn't deserve it. And this is someone who should not be roaming our streets. And yet, whether we're talking about Seattle or Olympia, Puyallup or Bellingham, there are lots of people like this out on the streets, and there is nothing the Democrats in power are doing to solve this crisis. They talk about solving the crisis. They say, oh, we're going to invest in mental health care. But we never see any results. Jason, why aren't you picking on the Republicans? Because they don't have power. Because they're not the ones making these decisions. I wish they did. But they don't. The people who are in charge are allowing this to happen, and it is not getting better. It is getting worse. We have a new mayor in Seattle, not really talking all that much. We have a council that's hard at work doing, I don't know. We have lawmakers right now in Olympia that are trying to ban guns, but doing nothing about threats like this, who are walking the streets every single day, creating new victims out of people. None of this is going to stop until we take control of the state back, take control of Seattle back, and that's not going to be easy unless you're all paying attention and you're all willing to do a little extra work. So I hope this story pushes you more in that direction.
The interview.
Well, Democrats, yet again, are trying to come after your guns. They have reintroduced bans, effectively, on guns that they find scary and don't really understand. But it was a point that was made yesterday during a committee hearing that I think is worth repeating and diving into a little bit more, one made by State Senator Linda Wilson, who represents the 17th Legislative District. She's based out of Vancouver, and she joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
So your point was the best one I heard, and it's effectively saying you guys are coming up with a whole bunch of laws to go after the people who aren't committing any of the gun crimes.
That's exactly right. And when you look at CPL holders, and we have a lot of those, and I don't know how many there are in the state right now, but they're like less than 1% ever involved in any unlawful events. especially involving firearms. The most law-abiding group out there is the CPL holders.
Yeah, and it's just remarkable. So where do you think the disconnect is? Or do you think there really is a disconnect? Is this really just about gun confiscation?
Well, it certainly seems like it's going that direction. I mean, because why are they continuing to go after the law-abiding gun owner and not after the criminal? It's the criminal here, and he's going to come, like in the bill I had yesterday, theft of a firearm. They're going to steal the gun. I mean, you can make it, it's just like having the area out there where it says no firearms allowed. That doesn't mean that they're going to not go there. They're going to go there. They don't follow the law. That's what a criminal does. Yeah, and this assault weapon ban, which it is not an assault weapon, and it isn't a military-grade rifle, is one of the best rifles for women to use, as a woman, speaking on that. So, you know, I mean, there's a little recoil. And the one thing I keep hearing is, well, it shoots faster. Well, no, it doesn't. It's one bullet at a time every time you pull the trigger, just like any other semi-automatic firearm.
Exactly. Although, but they point out, Senator, that that's why they're also trying to limit the amount of ammunition that you can have in a magazine.
Well, yes, that's right. They can try that, but I don't think it's the government's responsibility or their right to tell the gun owner how many bullets it's going to take to stop a threat. Right? I mean, who knows? You tell, particularly what happens these days, it's there's more than one assailant, one person out there coming after us, and particularly for women, when you're in your own home, that's one of the best defense rifles you can use.
Totally. And you know what, I look at this though, and it's funny because while I 100% agree with everything you just said, it, to me, it also just doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, we have a right to bear arms, and it doesn't matter whether or not you think it is, you know, on the Democratic side, if they think it's reasonable to have X amount of bullets or not, that doesn't matter. If you don't think that's an appropriate amount, guess what, you do not have to buy it.
That's right. And what's odd to me is that they can't decide how many they want for this large capacity magazine. They don't know how many they want. It's either 10 or 12 or 17 or 15. So it's very, very arbitrary number. And, you know, I mean, where's the science behind it, right?
Yeah, well, of course, there's no science behind it. And there's no logic behind it. And that it kind of, I do think it betrays their true motives. The argument that is usually given is that, well, the reason why we want to cut it down, because that's one more life that could be saved. Okay, that's certainly true for people who are using this gun and the magazine in an unlawful way. But by that logic, isn't one person too many? And they say that all the time already, that one life lost to gun violence is one too many. Okay, well, then they're making the argument eventually for just getting rid of all guns. Except, by the way, in the hands of the bad guys who they refuse to punish harshly.
That's exactly. Yes, that's exactly right. And you know, part of the problem with this, a lot of the problem with this large capacity magazine ban is that it's going to make so many of the guns that we carry inert, right? When you look at the Glock 17, which carries 17 rounds, that is a very common gun for a lot of people to carry. And so, I mean, it's a great gun range gun. Mm-hmm. And so if it's 10 or 12, then what do we do with all these firearms, which now then anybody that's legally carrying them now will then become a criminal because they're carrying a gun the government says we can't carry.
Yeah, and no logic at all behind it. I'm glad you offered your proposal. Unfortunately, we know it's not going to go anywhere because this is a Democratic base that doesn't believe in actually punishing criminals, even when the criminals are stealing guns, which is just always kind of weird to me that they're saying guns are bad, we want to get rid of them and punish people who misuse them, except for the actual criminals who misuse them. Then we give a pass, and by the way, we're not going to offer some extra charges as a result of someone using a stolen gun. We're getting rid of that because restorative justice or some nonsense. Senator Linda Wilson. Right. For the 17th Legislative District, thank you for bringing just a little bit of sanity to an insane conversation. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Now this.
The interview.
There's a pretty significant staffing crisis going on right now in King County at our detention centers in Seattle and Kent. In fact, after implementing the COVID vaccine mandate, firing some 35 employees, the staffing situation is so dire that the county is now paying some corrections officers over $100 an hour if they volunteer for overtime. And despite that, the county may still end up releasing criminals in order to alleviate some of the pressure on the staff. Joining me on the line is Dennis Folk. He's the president of the King County Corrections Guild. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So if you could just put into perspective how bad the crisis actually is that you had to get to this point of, you know, really incentivizing folks to work overtime.
So, you know, like you said, like you've reported in the past, we've been plagued with mandatory overtime for decades. Often we have officers that will come to work on their Monday and then be forced to work a double shift, 16-hour days. And because they have to commute from maybe Pierce County or Snow County, they'll sleep in the jail in a empty bed or jail set or jail bed, and then not go home until that's their Saturday. So we've been trying to come up with ideas on how we can address the staffing issues. The county's implemented hiring bonuses. You know, we're near 100 vacancies, and then with the COVID crisis, I just got word we got about 58 people out right now with COVID. So we were bouncing around ideas, you know, where can we incentivize people to volunteer to work? You know, historically, you know, we've always doubled our volunteer work hours versus our mandatory. But the county proposed an idea to us, you know, hey, we're willing to incentivize this. You know, what do you think about it? And we said, yeah, let's try it. If we can give people some relief where they're not being forced to work mandatory overtime and people can actually schedule when they're going to work, then let's do it. Then allow some people to go home and see their kids and their families. So we reached an agreement on this to where we can try this for the next 60 days to see how it works.
And, you know, presumably the expectation is it'll work and you can get rid of it in 60 days because, you know, you guys are dealing with an outbreak of Omicron. It's taken somewhat 70 staff members out who are fully vaccinated, which is kind of the irony in all of this. The county fired staff members for being unvaccinated because they believed that they would spread COVID, and yet they did not spread COVID. It's the ones who are vaccinated who spread and caught COVID.
And that's true. You know, I'm currently at home quarantined after getting COVID at work. I work down at the RJC where we house the majority of the COVID inmates, so I often have to go into those housing units. So, 35 officers we lost that could be helping with this. Many people have left just because of the mandatory overtime situation, and the morale has dipped so low that they're just like, I'll go work at another jail and I'll make less money. So they don't have to be subjected to the overtime. But if the mandate wasn't in place, yeah, we would have 35 more staff members here.
Why was the problem bad pre-COVID?
As far as
staffing, you were doing lots of mandatory overtime before COVID. It was a problem. You've had lots of vacancies for a while now. Not as many, but certainly you've had them.
Yeah, we've never seen something this high. You know, I've been with the department 23 years now, and I've never seen vacancies this high. I think there's a lot of contributing factors to it. One, people just don't want to work law enforcement, you know, nowadays. You know, a lot of law enforcement agencies are struggling to get people through the doors. Some have gotten pretty creative to keep their vacancy levels, you know, pretty low by offering, you know, decent wage packages and benefits packages and those sort of things. So they're able to minimize it a little bit. And I think King County, we got to step up and do that as well. You know, we've pitched some ideas. You know, the county did come forward and raise our hiring incentives, which I think could help. Mm-hmm. And the time will tell. You know, they did just recently hire 13 that are going through all their new hire process now, but we won't see those guys able to work by themselves for probably 6 months because they have to go off, you know, to the academy for training and field training and other things. So they won't be able to benefit our staffing numbers for a while.
Summertime, right?
Yeah, at least summertime.
Dennis Folk joining me on the line is the president of the King County Corrections Guild. We are talking about the news that officers who volunteer for overtime so that they can get away from the mandatory overtime in our jails here in Seattle will get offered 2.5 times their base rate. And, you know, these are corrections officers who are paid on a 12-step graduated salary plan. And if they're in one of those top steps making $41 an hour, they make $103 an hour and some change. At the same time, though, you're still taking the position, Dennis, that even with this, you're in a crisis mode and that something needs to give. And you've called on the county and the director of the department to stop pulling in any misdemeanor or nonviolent crimes, and the criminals who are currently there would be released if they're misdemeanor and nonviolent crimes. So take me through your thinking there.
So, you know, the prosecutor, the Public Defenders Union reached out to us and get our thoughts on this. And some of the concerns that they had dealt with access to their clients. You know, they're not able to get in because of our short staffing. You know, they have to wait a long period of time, or we just don't have staff to be able to get them to their visiting. Or because of COVID, these guys are in quarantine and they can't see them. So our thought was that if we could reduce our numbers and get ahead of this COVID crisis and let it, you know, we were looking at roughly a third of the jail under COVID protocols. And, you know, like you'd mentioned, you know, I've just got to report 58 staff members as of today that are out, and that fluctuates up and down each day. If we can get ahead of this and then get past the peak of this COVID crisis, then we could start looking at, lifting booking restrictions and stuff like that. We've had booking restrictions in place since the onset of COVID, where we weren't taking low-level misdemeanor crimes. It was all felonies.
And that's been bad news for the community, though, because I hear what you're saying, and I certainly acknowledge the problems that are facing the department. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. But when you release misdemeanor criminals or so-called nonviolent criminals, you understand this because you work in this industry. Oftentimes, those misdemeanors are a result of eventually what gets pled down from a felony or will refuse to be charged as a felony. These are not people who are usually, they're not people who are first-time offenders either. We have a huge prolific offender problem in this county. And so by releasing them out onto the streets, all we're doing is making it even more dangerous at a time where, hey, the SPD is dealing with a staffing crisis of its own. There are other departments that are stressed out as well because of COVID. It just seems like we're making it more dangerous to live in King County.
I think the important thing to take from this is that, you know, it wouldn't be those that may have been convicted of a crime, because those guys have jail sentences they need to serve. So those people, we couldn't just arbitrarily release them.
Correct.
Without a judge's permission. But if it's pretrial, you know, I got arrested on this misdemeanor, you know, DUI case, and I've been booked in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Could I release that DUI driver, you know, and maybe have court conditions or maybe electronic home monitoring or another option that we can keep them out of the jail, maybe at home under monitoring there? Could that be a better option?
But do you truly believe? No, and I hear you on that. But do you truly believe that that's a better option? Because as you know, it's almost impossible to get someone to be put in jail at this point. I mean, you have judges who are either offering no bail or extremely low bail. It's already difficult for people to stay in jail, and the reason why they're there, they have to be especially dangerous or a risk.
You know, it's one of these situations where, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, when we don't have the staff to run the jail, you know, what are our options? You know, what can we do?
You could rehire the people who are fired, right? I mean, is that part
of? Yeah.
So is that something that you're calling for? I know the Dow Constantine, the King County Executive, probably won't go with that, and certainly won't. But I mean, why not include that as part of the asks from the county?
Because we know that it's not going to go anywhere. You know, that Dow's not going to reverse his decision to bring any of those people back. And, you know, we have to come up with something else. And until that happens, I mean, yeah, I'd love to stand in front of Dow and say, hey, you know, we need to reconsider this and bring these people back. But until that happens, that door is closed to us right now.
Well, for what it's worth, I would suggest you at least get it on the record officially in front of him. Let him say no. Let him say no. Put a little bit of pressure on him just to at least consider it. And then when he says no, and you're right, he's going to say no, he at least then has to explain why he's choosing not to do that.
Yeah, let's put it on record. Now, let's bring back these officers, these corrections officers, and we'll let go to the COVID mandate. And let's help out with our staffing problem. Let's keep people in the jail where they belong.
There you go. Dennis Folk is the president of the King County Corrections Guild. Thank you so much for stopping by.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke the story and joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
A man was caught on video surveillance as he appears to be car prowling in Tacoma for almost an hour. It happened in broad daylight. This unidentified man is seen on surveillance driving through the parking lot of the Tacoma Mall. And he leaves his own car multiple times in order to peer through windows of cars that he is allegedly targeting. At one point, he's captured using some sort of prying tool that breaks the driver's side window before reaching out and snatching an item. It took 4 911 calls over the period of nearly 40 minutes for an understaffed Tacoma Police Department to arrive on the scene. But by that time, the alleged car prowler was gone. The surveillance was taken by Mike Poth. He is the vice president of an Issaquah-based investigation firm called Poth Investigations. He witnessed the whole thing. He shared with me the video, which right now is available at KTTH.com. And he joins me now. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason.
So you just happened to be around with an associate of yours. You were just working an assignment, working a case. And all of a sudden, you start to see a man who was driving around suspiciously. Take us through what you witnessed.
Yeah, we were working in the area of the Tacoma Mall around approximately 1:30 p.m. on January 12th. And I observed this individual walking between the cars, doing some suspicious activity. He appeared to be looking in various cars. I informed my associate of his activities before he walked out of my line of view. Eventually, I observed him drive a Nissan Sentra up past my location and peer into another truck before taking off. So we decided to follow this individual, and I immediately called 911. At that time, we observed him go to another vehicle, ultimately breaking the window on a Jeep and reaching in and gathering the items from the back seat. He then took those items, threw it into his vehicle, ended up calling 911 a second time. That was around 1:53, I believe, p.m.
Mm-hmm.
We then followed him to an adjacent lot where he broke a second window out of a Ford Expedition, took some items from that vehicle. Ultimately, this went on for quite a period of time, and I ended up calling 911 over four times during the course of this activity. I think we got him breaking at least four windows on four different vehicles over the course of that time.
What was shocking to me as I was watching this video, and again, all the video is available at KTTH.com, is that this was in broad daylight. He kind of looks around just to make sure there's no one very clearly close to him that could out him, but this was in the middle of the day.
Absolutely. Very brazen. I mean, there was people around. There was a bunch of vehicles that he was very focused on trying to break the window out of. It was clear that he was looking into these vehicles. And I think a lot of times there was enough traffic to where he got spooked and took off from that location. But he really didn't leave too far. He was on the north side of the mall. Then he'd went over to where the Joann Fabrics is and looked into multiple vehicles there. And just all throughout the mall, just very brazen, you know, driving around and looking at, I don't know, you know, 15 to 20 different vehicles, really looking for items to steal out of the back. It was apparent.
So you call 911 multiple times. They finally showed up about 40 minutes after the first call-ish?
Yeah, I think I called originally about 1:45 p.m. My last call was about 2:23 p.m., so that was call number four. And the police showed up approximately 5 to 10 minutes after that last call.
Okay, so at that point, the alleged car prowler had left, was nowhere to be seen. Officers make contact with you. How did that conversation go?
So when I talked to the officer, we informed him that we had video of him doing these activities. At that point, the officer informed me, because of the new state laws, that even if they saw him break a window of a vehicle and take items out of that, they couldn't get "quote unquote" hands on because they did not have a victim present to arrest him.
And a victim present makes it so that that victim can prove that they, in fact, own the car. Because under current Washington state laws, you have to have probable cause, no longer reasonable suspicion, to detain. And so, in theory, I guess these officers could have gone up to the person and asked him to voluntarily answer some questions. He wouldn't have to. He can just leave, and the cops really can't detain.
That is correct. And even if he fled the scene, they weren't allowed to
yep.
chase after him. But I think what got me is the fact that they didn't have a victim present. And number two, even if they talked to this individual asking him if that was his own vehicle he was breaking into, all he would have to do is say yes, and they would have to believe him, and not, again, they could not arrest him at that time.
Mike Poth is joining me on the line. He is the vice president over at Poth Investigations. It's a private investigation firm. He witnessed what sure seems like car prowling going on, but since the man is unidentified, as far as we know, he hasn't been charged with anything. We'll leave it at alleged, but folks can check out the video for a better look at exactly what happened. So as you're having the conversation with the officers, did they seem apologetic? Did they seem sort of, how were they from an attitude perspective when dealing with what probably everyone kind of knew was illegal behavior?
I would suggest that they were just as discouraged as I was. I mean, it was, you could tell the frustration, you know. I mean, this is the department, you know, informed them that they could not arrest them in these situations no longer. And you could tell that, you know, it was something that was also bothersome to them. I mean, I have no ill will towards the police. I mean, they're doing the best they can. And it is a frustrating situation, which is exactly why I sent you this video, because I think more people need to see this type of activity and what this law does to, you know, people.
From your perspective, as someone, you're not in law enforcement, but you obviously have to deal with people who are allegedly breaking the law. What were you thinking this entire time?
It kind of boggled my mind, to be honest with you. I mean, I couldn't understand. I couldn't comprehend it. You know the difference between right and wrong in a situation like this. You can't go around breaking into people's cars and stealing stuff with no ramifications. I just don't understand it. And it just created a bunch of victims that day, unnecessarily, to be honest with you.
Well, and by the way, just as a small correction, you can do this without any consequences.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what Democratic laws have done here in Washington State. Now, they say they're trying to fix some of them. I've seen some fixes proposed as far as, you know, detaining a suspect, but it doesn't appear that they would be able to detain the suspect, even if they were to pass these, you know, quote-unquote fixes, should this happen again. What is your message to folks? As someone who witnessed this, had to deal with officers who were, pardon the pun, handcuffed to really do anything.
Well, the first thing I said is, if you're going to park anywhere, don't leave anything in your back seat. I mean, that was apparent and obvious. I mean, as little as we can do, we can do some things by preventing ourselves getting stuff stolen. I mean, it was apparent that he was looking for items in these vehicles, and he would pass on vehicles where I don't think he actually observed anything in the back seat. So just be very vigilant of your belongings.
It's sad that you have to give that kind of advice. It's sad that folks have to worry about a car break-in in a very busy parking lot in the middle of the day. But unfortunately, the criminals in this state have become that brazen because they know there are no consequences to their behavior. And that's just a sad state of affairs. So hopefully people won't just take you up on your advice, making sure that you're not leaving anything in your car, obviously making sure it's locked and whatnot, getting your alarm put on, because it didn't appear that there were any alarms that were set off as a result of what you captured on video. But just at the end of the day, put more pressure on lawmakers to make these changes, and the changes aren't going far enough that have been proposed. Republicans have a whole series of bills, 21 on the House side and 21 on the Senate side, but they appear to be DOA. So when you don't have power in Olympia, you can't really change any of these laws. And right now, the Democrats have a lot of the power, all of the power. But hopefully that'll change soon. Mike Poth is with Poth Investigations. Thank you so much for sharing the video with us and for telling us what you saw happen. I really appreciate it.
Certainly, Jason. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. And again, the video is up at ktth.com, or you can text the keyword RANTZ, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my blog. It's the first one that's up there. Watch the video, read the story, hear from the Tacoma PD as well. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
There's a story out of the Seattle Times that took a look at a Census Bureau study or survey, I guess, of folks across the country who remain unvaccinated. Because remember, we're supposed to judge people who are choosing not to get vaccinated. If they don't need it, it doesn't matter. If they've already had COVID like yesterday, it doesn't matter. We're supposed to be judging them as unclean. And we're supposed to put societal pressure on them to get the vaccine so that they can protect society by not catching the variant that evades the very vaccine we're telling them to get. And then after they get vaccinated, we're telling them to make sure that they test on a regular basis to make sure that they don't have COVID, which, again, the vaccine was supposed to prevent from actually taking over your immune system. But okay, we'll push all that aside, because I think the data here is really interesting. And by the way, I say all that as someone who is vaccinated, who recommends vaccinations. in consultation with your doctor. I'm just against mandates. And I always feel like I have to add that because bad faith activists, partisans, media outlets, or media members will say, he's anti-vax. No, I'm not. So it looked at the local numbers, not just the national numbers. And only about 7% of the Seattle metro area and its residents over the age of 18 remain unvaccinated. That was at least as of early December when this study actually was underway. We just got the results, but obviously that number might move a little bit. But at this point, my assumption is if you haven't already been vaccinated, if you've not already gone through with it, you're not going to anytime soon, at least. And so this only looked, or the results that we got were only from the Seattle area. So we don't really know what the numbers are, for example, in Bellingham or in, I don't know, Tukwila, Renton, Snohomish, North Bend. We don't give them enough love. So Seattle finds itself in the top four most vaccinated cities. And they make a note in the Times that Phoenix has the highest number of unvaccinated. And by the way, if you look at their rate of infection, it's almost the same as Seattle's. Just throwing that out there. So the Census Bureau is trying to find out, okay, why didn't you get vaccinated? And there are two reasons that get over the 50% threshold where we can look at that and say, okay, that's pretty significant. But again, remember, we're only talking about 7% of locals. 60% are concerned about possible side effects. And 54.5% don't trust the government. Now, there's some other ones that kind of pop. Someone says 44.7% of people say, I don't need a vaccine. I don't think I need it. 40% say they just want to wait and see if it's safe. That's really tied to I am concerned about possible side effects, right? There are people who say 36% say they don't trust the vaccines. Same thing. We don't trust the government. We're concerned about possible side effects. So it's all basically along the line of the two biggies there, which is concerned about the side effects and they don't trust the government. Do you honestly blame people for holding either of those positions, regardless as to whether or not you hold them or whether or not you're vaccinated? And my presumption is the majority of people who are listening right now are, in fact, vaccinated. Do you have any sense as to of confusion? I don't understand. The government, over and over and over again, not really the government per se, but the politicians who run the government, depending on the politician, was not giving you either honest advice or honest talking points about the vaccine, or they made so many mistakes without then copying to the fact that they made so many mistakes that you've just lost all trust in them. And when they tell you that the vaccine is safe and they told you over and over and over again a whole bunch of data and talking points that you know are false, you're then going to say, well, I don't think the vaccine is safe, when they go out of their way to completely ignore not just your good faith questions about the safety of the vaccine, but they mock you for asking them, or they completely ignore some of the side effects that are real. Instead of acknowledging them and saying, look, yes, it is true that there is a slightly higher likelihood of a teenager, especially boys between 16 and 21, who get the vaccine developing myocarditis, instead of saying that, they go, oh, it's basically not happening. And then say, okay, yeah, I guess it's happening, but it is so rare, we're not even going to talk about it. Why not? When you don't want to talk about something, it sounds like you're hiding it. And that's not always fair for us to judge that. But when you're doing that over and over and over again some more for a vaccine that was oversold, knowingly, I think, people are going to ask questions and then stop trusting you. When we were told by some folks that women were experiencing some problems with their menstrual cycles having just been vaccinated, we were told, oh, that's fake. You're just spreading misinformation. You're an anti-vaxxer. Only to then get a study that just came out saying, no, there's truth to that. People aren't going to trust you. There's always going to be a percentage of folks, and 7%, by the way, sounds even low to me, but let's just go with it. There's always going to be a percentage of folks at 7% or so who are untrusting of something, who are unwilling to do something. And it's not just having to do with getting a vaccine. It's some people just will never trust elections. Some people will never trust new technology. Some people will never wear their seatbelts. They'll never wear a helmet. No matter what you do, they are just opposed to it for a variety of reasons. There's always going to be that small percentage on everything. And yet we pretend that this small percentage on whether or not they're going to get the vaccine is somehow meaningful when it's not. It's not. If you told me this vaccine actually stopped the spread of COVID, and then you had the data to back that up, that would be different. But very clearly, it doesn't. Not with Omicron, and not even with Delta. Again, they downplayed the number of breakthrough cases because they want you to get the vaccine, so they're keeping information from you, which makes people who are already going into this hesitant to trust you. But it's also turning people like me, who I wouldn't say I'm generally trusting per se. That's not the word I would use. I would say I'm not going to automatically assume that something the government tells me or politician tells me or a public health official tells me is a lie. You've turned people like me into folks who will now question everything you say. Even the stuff that very clearly makes sense to me or that I know is correct. That's what they're doing. And they don't seem to care that's what they're doing. They just love the idea that they can get on their soapbox and bash that 7% who's unvaccinated or whatever the percentage is in the state or the city or in this country that they're looking at. It is absolutely ludicrous and it's self-defeating.
The last rant.
But at the same time, let's be clear. There are folks on our side of the aisle, politically speaking, generally they're on our side of the aisle, who spread misinformation. They make it really, really easy for folks on the left to then use and claim that there's some nefarious plot or that there's a whole bunch of fringe people within the Republican Party. A good example was the story that we fact-checked, what, a week and a half ago now? Or maybe it was last week? The idea of the State Board of Health going to put people in internment camps. A stupid idea that won't go away. A stupid conspiracy that won't go away. And there were folks out there who knew it was false, but they wanted to push it because they thought it could be true at some point. And so it doesn't matter if it might technically be false now, or they didn't do any fact checking. There were lots of you who, in good faith attempts, tried to find out whether or not something was real. But in doing so, some of you were spreading it online. I can't believe this is true. Is this true? And you'll post it. That's not a good way to do it. And people on the left, bad faith partisans, the ones you might hear on CNN or MSNBC, they jump on that to pretend that everyone on the right holds those positions. There was some UW professor over the weekend who was on CNN making that stupid point in the most partisan and disingenuous ways. You go look at her Twitter feed, it's filled with just anti-Republican stuff. So just be careful to fact check things in meaningful ways. Don't go to some blog you've never heard of or blogs that only say what you want them to say. Do some actual research if you're truly concerned about something. Yeah, you can send it to me and I'll do what I can to give you an answer. But I mean, it can't just be sending me stuff hoping that I'll fact check for you. You've got to be able to fact check yourself and do that before you post it on social media, before you post on your Facebook wall or your Twitter feed, because it's going to be used to hurt the entire Republican Party and the conservative movement. So just be a little bit more aware of that. And that's the last rant.